I'm Bill Barole. Over the last few decades, I've done every kind of writing there is to do, from journalism to humor, books, movies, and television.
I'm Matt Ricardo. For the last 30 years, I've toured the world as a variety performer.
We've come together across the Atlantic to talk about creativity, what it is, where it comes from, why it matters.
Thomas Edison said, "To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk."
This is Imagination and Junk, a conversation about the hard work of creativity.
Episode 30, A Slightly Dangerous Idea.
Dear Bill, allow me to open this episode with a quote from one of my favourites, the mighty Run DMC. "I won't fail, I won't flop, stall or stutter, yes, but I won't stop. It takes hard work just to be like this, you should know, because I'm a perfectionist." Yes, in this episode we'll be talking about old school rap icons and their influence on the later generations in terms of style, flow and content. In 1986, Eric B. and Rakim, okay, we're not, but really any excuse to mention Eric B. and Rakim. Today, we're going to talk about perfection. More specifically, pursuing perfection in artistic work versus, well, you know, not doing that. Or, as this episode is named in our group chat messages, perfection versus good enough. So, here's my opening salvo. It seems fairly obvious that one should have one's sights set on perfection. It's a lofty goal, sure, but a lot of people will tell you that goals are important, so why not have loftiest of them? It feels like that's what we should be doing, but there's no downside to it. Shoot for the moon, land amongst the stars, right? The pursuit of perfection is what drives us to work hard, to hone our craft, to want to get better every time we try. And perhaps you saw this coming, do not agree with this at all. Because here's the thing, and I'll use another quote, this time from the Welsh comedian John Sparks, who said, "Nothing is perfect except geometry, and you're no rhombus." My point being, art, as we've previously discussed in this very podcast, is many things. Exploratory, personal, fun, difficult, easy, messy, not fun, big, small, and an almost infinite list of other things. But one thing that I think art rarely, if ever, is perfect. Because how would that work? Art is partly defined by the person consuming it. That's one of the magical things about any kind of artwork. It's not finished, really, until it's reached the soul of someone else. The same creative work is a little bit different to everyone who consumes it. So what might seem perfect to someone won't be perfect for everyone. And so if we're looking at this as if it were, in fact, geometry, it's never really perfect. Rhombuses are the same for everyone. Art ain't. So then, why are we talking about the idea if at least half of the hosts of this podcast thinks that it is basically not a thing? Well, things don't have to be a fact to still be a factor. If you're an artist striving for perfection, there's a very real chance you're always going to find yourself doing just that, striving. You could spend a lifetime thinking you're not good enough because your work doesn't live up to a vaporous, undefinable idea that you've been convinced you should live or die by. And that's the kind of vicious circle that's got a very decent chance of making you want to stop trying. That's the trap that perfectionism lays. It's the trap that will have you rewriting that play over and over and over, chasing the fiction of flawlessness, and stopping the play from ever seeing a stage. It's the trap that makes you do endless sketches of your idea for a painting, always feeling so close to making it just right but never getting your paints out. Perfectionism is the long grass laid over the hole in the ground so that you walk into it, and that hole in the ground is procrastination. Perfection will stop you starting, and worse, stop you finishing. So what's the solution? I think when you start something creative, you just got to avoid the idea of perfection. I mean, to be honest, I think you should also avoid the idea of it being any good at all. It might be, it might not be, but the most important thing is that you start, that the it that might be good or bad exists at all. Then you can start to strive towards something, not perfection, but direction. The next dot in the dot-to-dot puzzle of your work, one bit of growth at a time, and see where it goes. It won't be perfect, because nothing universally ever is, but that's good, because apart from anything else, perfection is boring. The energy that you might have put toward knowing how close something is to perfection is wasted. Put that energy instead into knowing when the imperfections are beautiful. When it's the imperfections that make something of worth, that's when you're really cooking. That's when it's good enough. Unless, of course, you're making rhombuses, in which case they should be perfect. Talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, as somebody who grew up in Philadelphia, I can tell you that its summers are brain-numbingly hot and humid. Now, we humans have done our level best to boil the very earth we live on in the years since, but things weren't that much cooler in the summer of 1787, according to contemporary accounts by members of the Constitutional Convention, which met from late May to mid-September in the Assembly Room at the Pennsylvania State House, now known as Independence Hall. It's just about three blocks from the house I grew up in. A delegate from neighboring New Jersey, William Patterson, and why yes, thank you for asking, he is the Patterson who Patterson, New Jersey is named for, and if you've ever been to Patterson, you know what a high honor that is. William Patterson described my hometown that summer as, quote, the warmest place I have ever been in. And Delegate Pierce Butler of South Carolina, where they know from hot and humid, noted that his wife was so oppressed by the weather in Philadelphia that she packed up and went home. So, really, it's all the more impressive that a bunch of guys sitting around in wigs, stockings, and woolen breeches, in a room where the windows were most often shut for privacy, would have come up with a piece of writing we still read and cherish today. Theoretically. Let me draw your attention to one famous bit of it, most likely authored by Gouverneur Morris, although it's rumored that Robert Towne flew in for a quick polish. It's the first line of the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. Oh, Gouverneur, you sly fox. I see what you did there. A single word carries a whole lot of weight in that sentence, and it isn't too much to say that that single word has set the tone for 200 plus years of political history in my country. Morris didn't claim that the goal of the convention was to form a perfect union, only a more perfect one, a union that would be perpetually in the process of improving itself. Again, theoretically. These were smart guys, smart, sweaty guys, and they understood that when it came to nationhood, perfection was impossible. The process, the movement toward perfection, well, that was the whole ballgame, constitutionally speaking. It's a pretty deft piece of writing, if you think about it, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. No reason, nothing to see here, move on. Anyway, yes, let's talk about perfection. If I'm following you, and I hope I'm not because the last thing you want to do is follow a juggler, you're saying that striving for perfection in creativity is for suckers, a mug's game. And I'd agree, if we can slice the rhetorical onion thinly. Striving for perfection is, yes, inevitably a recipe for falling short, because perfection is an impossibility in the arts as it is in everything else. If, as you say, you're not a rhombus. And most of us aren't. I think we can agree on that. But striving toward perfection? Well, this might seem like hair splitting, but follow me here. I'd argue that this distinction makes all the difference, especially in creativity, as you've established in that elegant adjectival blizzard. Perfectibility? Simply not attainable. Besides which, if it were attainable, who'd want to attain it? Whatever perfection might look like in art, and like you, I'm hard-pressed to visualize it, you're right. It'd be a snooze. Maddeningly beside the point. Irrelevant. And that isn't only because, as you posit, a work of art isn't complete until it's been received, been absorbed. It's also because creativity is about aspiration. It's about pursuit. It's about reaching for something, not about grasping something. Just as America, the America that's an idea, isn't about a perfect union, but a more perfect union, a thing that is continually being reborn, shaped, refined. So, what does this mean in practical terms when we're talking about creativity? Unlike you, I don't favor abandoning the notion of perfection entirely. To me, it's all about the framing. Keep a compass heading for perfection, whatever that may mean to you, but know that it's a place you'll never reach. And that's okay. It's better than okay. For one thing, it gives you the precious gifts of perspective and humility. These are hard won in life, as they are in art, and any shift in thinking that allows them in is a good thing. But more than that, knowing that you'll never reach perfection, only toward it, is enormously freeing. It allows you the messiness that creativity requires. And it frees you from the fatal temptation, as you've said, to get all your ducks in a row. The ducks of creativity are never in a row. They're wandering around in a desultory fashion, pecking at the ground. I think that's what ducks do. Or is that chickens? Or condors? Look, I don't know birds. I grew up in a city. That, my friend, is a trick we writers call squaring the circle. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. Talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, having grown up in Edmonton, North London, a place I love for its diversity, its community, its grit, and its place as the area of London that is basically Tottenham but without the coolness, I don't have much knowledge of the US Constitution. As I understand it, as school children, you Americans start each day by kissing the flag and then tucking a folded $5 into the frame of the Constitution while whispering the phrase, "Get yourself something nice." We Londoners did not do that. As young children, we began each day by filing into our classrooms, sitting quietly, having our teacher take a note of who was absent because of a previous bare-knuckle boxing engagement or prison. Anyhow. This more perfect thing bothers me. I mean, look, I know that over there you people take this document seriously, but the first sentence of the preamble has a basic mistake. Oh, and by the way, I love that it has a preamble. It's like on a TV show where they catch you up. Previously, on America. Anyway, here's the thing. Something cannot be more perfect, just as something cannot be less perfect. Perfection is a wholly digital concept. It is, or it is not. Something is either perfect or it is imperfect. I should probably send an email to someone so they can correct it. It feels like my autistic brain gets stuck on that, but rationally I can see that although it might be technically wrong, it's there to inspire the striving that you talk about. And I guess that's the good thing. When we talk about creativity, striving is, I suppose, another word for moving with a direction. And maybe I can see that having the idea of perfection in your head as something to move towards is useful, but still, I don't know. I can't help but think there are plenty of other, more helpful things to be shooting for. Authenticity, honesty, meaning, poetry. I mean, really, this is where you insert whatever word came into your head when you first had whatever idea we're talking about, right? Oh, I've got a funny idea. Okay, shoot for funny. Failing that, shoot for finished. Striving for perfection means you have to keep in your head at all times that it is, as you say, a place you'll never get to because it doesn't exist. If you can do that, then sure, I guess it could be an effective motivator, but if you lose sight of that, then it feels to me like it would be very easy to get to the point where you're not making anything perfect, so you always feel like you have, to some extent, failed. And another thing. In creative work, do we really always absolutely need to be pursuing something? Haven't a zillion beautiful things come out of someone just, for want of a better phrase, dicking around? Good though it can be to have a pin stuck in a map so you know at least in which direction to head, isn't it just as valid to leave the map at home and go out and get lost? I guess it's whatever gets you moving, whatever gets you making. To some extent, all of these ideas of pursuing perfection, of pursuing something else, of wandering aimlessly, they're all just little mental con tricks to get us out of bed and in front of a sketch pad. I think the idea of perfection in the arts is a slightly dangerous idea, but if it gets you moving, then fine. I had a double espresso before writing this piece. You shouldn't just drink espresso all the time, just as you shouldn't always have perfection in the front of your head, but the coffee did get me started. I'm just saying, whatever gets you started, once you are started, maybe put it in the back seat and let all the other gears and pistons of creativity take over. You started with a very American reference, so I'm going to end with a very British one. You know the Spitfire.
A bird that breathes fire and spits out death and destruction. A Spitfire bird.
The iconic British fighter plane that was instrumental in winning World War II. You know how they start the engine in a Spitfire? They use a thing called a Kaufman starter. And here's what it was. It was a shotgun. Basically, there was a mechanism built into the cockpit controls that started the engine by firing a shotgun into it. The shotgun shell pushed a piston, which got things moving. It gets things moving, but you can't fly a plane by shooting shotguns into it. Oh, look, I just got a reply to my email about the mistake in the Constitution. Oh, awesome! Apparently Trump has made it open source now, so anyone can change it. All you need is a Truth Social login. Oh, now it's saying my location has to be Russia to do that. That's weird. Satire! Talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, I have to confess, I was not aware of how British schoolchildren start their days. I'd always been under the impression that British school days start with the boys doing their Winston Churchill impressions, changing into black frock coats and planting big candy cigars in their jaws so they can pace around growling about Nazis while the girls served tea and then everybody brushed up on their spellcasting. So thanks for setting me straight on that, because the last thing I'd want to do is further any cartoonish stereotypes. Oh, also, I appreciate your nuanced take on the whole more perfect union thing, because sure, why not? Go ahead. Get hung up on grammar while my country burns itself to the waterline. And I'm not going to point out, because why would I, that when you say there are plenty of other more helpful things to be shooting for than perfection, oh wait, hang on, a thing can't be more helpful, because helpful is an on-off thing. Something either is or isn't helpful. Not going to get bogged down in that syntactical quagmire. Nope, it's fine. Everything over here is fine. I'm sorry. The end of democracy makes me just a smidge cranky. I'll try to pull up. You said something that caught my ear. Whatever gets you started, once you are started, maybe put it in the back seat and let all the other gears and pistons of creativity take over. This is an intriguing metaphor. It reminds me of something that was said by John Nichols, who writes about basketball under the fabulous pseudonym LeJethro Jenkins. He said, "This is what I think about fear. Put that bitch in the back seat. It can ride, but it can't drive." I think you and Jenkins are talking about the same thing, in a way, and I'm guessing this is probably the first time someone has compared you to a guy called LeJethro. You're both talking about the difference between something that motivates and something that accompanies, that rides along. Perfection, to the degree that it creeps into the mix, is more the latter, I think. It isn't there at the birth of the idea, because there's a name for someone whose initial impulse is, I am going to create the platonic ideal of a thing, and that name is sociopath. Look, there's a reason they call it an ideal, and I don't think creative people, at least healthy ones, start with an idea of creating something perfect. They start with the simpler goal of just creating something. But the prospect of perfection may enter the process at some later point, in the way of idle speculation, and I'm not sure I'm ready to abandon the idea that this can be momentarily useful, if only because it gives you a dose of that humility I mentioned last time. Humility is a good thing for a creative person. Hubris blinds you. Humility is a good pair of glasses. It helps you keep some clarity on what motivates you to create and what motivates you to keep creating, to push ahead and persevere. Those may well be, they most likely are, two different things. I'm also not ready yet to give up on the notion of striving. I don't think I agree with you that striving implies directionality, a kind of straight-line path toward a goal. To me, striving simply suggests movement, and it doesn't preclude the kind of wandering that I think we both feel is at the heart of creativity. Striving can simply describe a hunger to do, to make, and to keep moving. It's hard to argue these aren't good things. Or maybe, having started this with a mean-spirited disquisition on semantics, I'm just still in a pissy mood. Even if I am, You have to give me some credit for introducing you to Le Jethro Jenkins. I once put on social media, back in the days when social media was something fun and kicky, and not a hellmouth leading directly to the center of the earth where the demons live. I put on social media that I was planning to adopt a pseudonym to leave all the baggage of my old identity behind, and the pseudonym I chose was Deshaun Duplessis Dupre. I still think it has a ring to it. I'm wondering, what would your pseudonym be? I'll talk to you next time. Deshaun.
Dear Deshaun, my pseudonym, which I may have in fact used in a situation where I wanted to avoid someone I disliked and have no mention of my name on something they may have looked at, is Don Lockwood, the Gene Kelly character in Singing in the Rain. It feels like it reads as sufficiently mundane so as not to draw attention to itself, but it's also pretty catchy and, you know, if you know, you know. And this gives me permission to share one of my favourite wrestling things. Yes, I'm talking about wrestling again. The legendary wrestler Ricky Steamboat, whose name came, boringly, from a resemblance to another wrestler also called Steamboat, really, really should have stuck with his real name, which was Dick Blood. Anyway, happy to fill in the gaps to your knowledge of British school life. The Winston Churchill impressions are only done by British schoolchildren up to the age of 8, and the cigars were not candy. How else are the little ones going to build strong bones? Oh, and let's get this grammatical stuff out of the way. Helpful is an analogue concept. Something can be helpful, but still not fully help. Someone can need help, be helped, and then, because of not having a totality of help, they can still need help. Helping is a process, not a destination, and being helpful is just a document of that ongoing process. Rather than a binary descriptor, it is technically a gradable adjective. It exists, just like me, on a spectrum. Ha ha ha. Also, it's good to get an update from an embedded source on the collapse of democracy over there so that we know what we'll be getting soon over here once sentient wet cigarette butt Nigel Farage wins the next election and becomes our new Prime Minister. Welcome to Imagination and Junk, the podcast about... I like your idea that the pursuit of perfection might be useful because of how it teaches humility. That's kind of funny. Maybe it's almost an example of the creative world self-correcting to maintain balance. That if you're confident or arrogant enough to think that you have a genuine shot at making something perfect, reality will intervene and teach you exactly the lesson you needed to learn so you won't be that dumb again. Maybe you're right about striving. Maybe. Perhaps. Probably. Okay, yeah. I guess it is just another word for, well, trying. And that's possibly one of the things this podcast is here for, to encourage people to do creative things, but also to remind them that it is work. It requires effort. Striving. So as we have done before in these conversations, we end up with this. The thing we're talking about, in this case, perfection, well, we can debate its existence until our tassels fall off, but as we have that debate, we quickly come around to the conclusion that it doesn't matter if it exists or not. It doesn't matter if it's attainable or not, because it's not there as something to be reached. It's there as a signpost to show you a direction. So much of our beloved hard work of creativity is having something on the horizon to strive towards. And sure, it might turn out to be a luxury hotel or a hazy mirage that melts away as soon as you get to it, but at least it gave you a reason to move. It's interesting. When I write these letters to you, usually I'm pretty fast. I hammer out something train of thought style, then go back over it to get it as close to making sense as it can be, and then I'm pretty much done. But occasionally, I get stuck in the mud on one. And this was one of those. I found the idea of perfection as something that would even be present in a creative's mind to be a tricky concept. Perhaps because of my own low self-esteem, I've always just shot for having made something, anything at all, and tried to ignore thoughts on how good it was so as to avoid a slippery slope to feelings of loserhood. I know how my brain works. So maybe I've learned to steer away from its weaknesses more than I thought I had. As I read this back before I send it to you, I'm not sure if I've said much of note or interest, but I do know this, it's not perfect. But then again, what is? Except a rhombus. Talk to you soon. Don.
Dear Matt, confession time. One of my ongoing fears about this podcast is that we reach a point where we start repeating ourselves. There's nothing perfect about that prospect, or even very good. I think we've done a pretty good job of avoiding that pitfall. But sometimes I find myself chewing on a given segment, like this one, and remembering something I said in a previous episode, and I think, man, this would have been a good place for that. And so it is with this moment we find ourselves at now. I have the perfect thing to go right here and close this episode. The trouble is, I used it in a previous episode. What am I going to do? I'm going to use it again. The path of creativity is a twisty one, and sometimes you loop back over ground you've already traveled. So here goes. When you said that perfection is not a thing to be reached, it's there as a signpost to show you a direction, I found myself thinking about Bruce Springsteen in the summer of 1975. He was 26 that summer, and in some hot water with his label, and under the most intense pressure from within and without his own feverishly creative brain. He'd been working on the record that would become Born to Run since the beginning of the previous year, and now he had a finished product. All those endless nights in the studio, the night and day he spent 16 hours leading Clarence Clemons through the saxophone solo on Jungle Land, literally teaching it to him note by note. That night, and all the other nights, boiled down to a slab of acetate. The last stage before the release version. All it needed was his okay. And he just couldn't pull the trigger. He was tortured by indecision. Was it good enough? Was it good? He'd been shooting for something grand and epic and, yes, perfect. And he was tormented by the idea that everything was riding on this record, every dream he'd ever had since the moment he picked up a guitar. And he had no idea if he'd pulled it off. So he stalled and stalled. And stalled. The band piled into a van for an East Coast tour, and he stalled, and he stalled, at one point being so dismayed by what he heard that he sailed the acetate into the swimming pool of his hotel, and he stalled. He was frozen. Here's what finally happened. Deep in despair, deep in his own head, unable to make a move, he had a call one night from a friend. "I heard the mix," the friend said. "Yeah?" Springsteen said. "What did you think?" The friend said, "I don't know. I thought it was pretty good." And as Springsteen told the story years later, referring to his manager, John Landau, "I said to John, just put it out. Just put it out." You could hear it in his voice, a kind of surrender, the way a drowning man might surrender to the waves, his soul saying, "I did my best. That's all I got. I'm done." Perfection had been the angel on his shoulder and the devil that drove him. And the way I parse the story is, he finally reached a moment where he realized it was an impossibility and something worse, a toxin that would first paralyze him and then kill him, creatively speaking. So he put it down. He let it go. Did Springsteen make something perfect when he made Born to Run? Listeners will, inevitably, disagree about that. But perfection was with him. It rode along, and it led him to make a record that many of us think is a masterpiece. Is that enough? Is it enough for you or for me? I don't know. Put it out. I'll talk to you soon. Bill. Imagination and Junk is written by Bill Barole in the U.S. and Matt Ricardo in the U.K., with audio production by Bill Barole. For more information, show notes, and bonus content, it's imaginationandjunk.com.